I think part of the problem has been that in many ways, as politicians, we have ceded power to civil servants and state agencies and unelected advisors. And, I'm reflecting the views of not just constituents, but people I know. Why does it take so bloody long to get certain things done? This is not a perfect country. I totally get that. And we have a lot of problems. But it's also an amazing place. Like, it's a beautiful place, but incredible people. And as I said, that having those opportunities around democracy and every day I go into Leinster House, there's nearly always a peaceful protest outside the front of Leinster House. That is such a wonderful and important part of our democracy.
I do want to give you an opportunity to respond to this, because there's going to be people watching this thinking to themselves, well, listen, you understand what you're saying, but Fianna Fáil has have had more than enough time to solve the housing crisis. You probably have heard that point many times before. How would you respond to that? Hello, and welcome to Conversations with Sam Assad. That's me. It's not about me, it's about my guests. And today I'm joined by Malcolm Byrne, a current Fianna Fáil TD. Malcolm has been involved in politics for more than two decades and is known as a future-focused voice in public life. We discuss his political journey, the future of Fianna Fáil, and some of the major challenges facing Ireland, from housing to the rise of artificial intelligence. So enjoy my conversation with Deputy Malcolm Byrne. Deputy Malcolm Byrne, thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Sam.
You grew up in Nagori, County Wexford, the eldest of five children. What kind of childhood did you have in Wexford, and do you think any part of that upbringing planted the seed for a life in public service?
My mum was a nurse in St Aidan's, which was a local facility for those with special needs. My dad worked as road overseer with Wexford County Council, and my parents were always involved in things and very committed to the community. And then growing up, around the kitchen dinner table, along with my siblings, we'd always be discussing issues. My parents always encouraged us to have a view and get involved. And from my own perspective, I was interested in politics from a very early age and about how politics could make a big difference. As I was going through school, a lot of really big changes were happening around the world. So I remember rushing home from school to see what was happening in Central and Eastern Europe with the fall of communism, the fall of the Berlin Wall, Tiananmen Square, and what happened in Beijing. Nelson Mandela was set free in South Africa, and then in Ireland we had the peace process. So I suppose, growing up then during into the 90s, and going on to UCD, I was very fortunate in many ways that it was an era of great optimism about seeing the world changing and the ability of politics to be able to change things. And I always think that, if people say, well, what does politics ever achieve or what does it ever do? I think in Ireland, one of the best examples of that is the peace process. Yes, there are still challenges, but it's a hell of a lot better in the north and on these islands than the way it used to be.
You were just 25 years of age when you were elected to Gorey Town Council in 99, the youngest member at that time, and you topped the poll, I believe. What do you remember about that campaign, and what drew you into local politics so early on?
I suppose, well, I had been involved in student politics when I was in UCD, but I think local democracy is really important. It's the closest form of democracy to people. And, I'm passionate about where I grew up. I love my hometown and the surrounding area. And for anyone who wants to come and visit Gorey, it's a great place. There's over 50 places to sit down and eat. We've all the major supermarket chains, plenty of retail outlets, cinema, theatre, great schools. So I love where we are, close to the mountains and to the beaches. So there's plenty to do. And I guess I felt that I had something to contribute to the local area. I've always been involved in lots of things in the community. So ran, was elected at the town council, later was onto the county council. But having a career in local government, and it's not a surprise that a lot of our politicians come through local government, it gives you that experience. It gives you an understanding about, how the decision-making process works and how you can get things done.
In 2014, you were named one of Europe's 40 under 40 young leaders as part of the European Young Leaders Programme. What did that recognition mean for you personally and professionally?
So that European Young Leaders Programme is, it's a fantastic network, and it's not just about young people in politics, it's people in culture, in sport, in business. And I always find it incredibly useful. And I'd say this about not just about politics, but about anything in which you're involved in life. You know, having a broad mix of contacts, and I certainly have friends with, you know, all sorts of interests. It's great to be able to see things through a different lens, to listen to somebody, you know, explaining something from their perspective. You know, so an artist will look at something in a very different way, maybe to a politician or, you know, to somebody who might be involved in a social enterprise. So hearing those perspectives is always useful, and particularly doing it at a European level. And I certainly find that as well, dealing with politicians across Europe, we're addressing often a lot of the very same challenges. But understanding, for instance, how, you know, an issue we're facing in Ireland, how they're also looking at it in France or Denmark or in Slovakia is something that I've always found very informative and useful. Doesn't mean we have to mimic exactly what another country does, but I think we can certainly learn from each other. I'm deeply committed to the European Union. I think it's been the world's greatest peace and prosperity project. And I think the more that we can cooperate, not just between governments, but indeed for peoples to be able to mix and understand each other, it's really important.
After almost 2 decades in local government, you decided to run for the Dáil. You were a candidate for Fianna Fáil in the 2016 election. Didn't win a seat. You contested the European elections in 2019, but no luck there. You come back later that year for an initial stint in the Dáil, winning a by-election to fill the vacancy left by Mick Wallace. Then you lost that seat in the 2020 general election. You get elected to the Seanad, and then you get elected once again to the Dáil in 2024. What lesson did you learn from those campaigns, from the ups and downs, from being a young county councillor to the sudden victory, loss of a Dáil seat, and then working your way back?
Never give up. You know, and if you believe in something, you know, go out there and battle for it. I've always had huge respect for anybody who puts their name on a ballot paper. It takes courage to do that, regardless of whether I agree with them politically or not. You know, there are plenty of people who spend their lives sitting on their backsides, not contributing to their community, you know, giving out on social media, but won't have the courage to put their name on a ballot paper. So for anyone to do that, I think it's always good. For me, I guess, look, you know, you win some, you lose some. You probably learn more about campaigning often from elections that you lose, because you go, okay, you know, maybe could have addressed this or done something differently. The 2020 general election, after winning in the by-election, was a particular disappointment. You know, it's 73 days in the Dáil. And part of the reason why it was, you know, we ran a really good campaign, because obviously we, you know, come off the back of a local European campaign, you know, successful by-election campaign. So the campaign on the ground was very good. But certainly, you know, the early 2020 campaign for Fianna Fáil was not good. So I was kind of happy that, you know, we did what we could on the ground, but the national campaign didn't help us. But, you know, I was always very grateful to the real heroes of democracy are the, you know, the people who go out and canvass for you, who put up the posters, who ask people to vote for you and who believe in you. I mean, to all of them who've ever helped in any campaign, I'm always really grateful, and I always remember all of that.
You touched upon earlier the peace process, and just bringing it to the topic of United Ireland. One of the things you talked about was a vision for a future United Ireland. You talked about how days like the 12th of July, St. Patrick's Day, it could be public holidays for the whole country, and join the Commonwealth might be worth discussing to make Eunice feel at home. How do you reflect on those contributions today? Like, do you think Irish political discourse is a different place right now to have those kinds of parallel long-term conversations without them becoming polarised?
United Ireland is not going to be somebody from Dublin marching up to Stormont outside Belfast and planting a tricolour. And I think, you know, it's going to be inevitable. The time frame, you know, we can discuss. But, you know, no matter what happens, there will still be on this island of over 7 million people, there will still be about a million people who will have a British identity. And it doesn't matter, identity is innate. It's very strong. You know, that is not going to change because of new constitution arrangements. There will also be something of the order now of about 700,000 to 800,000 people on this island who are neither green nor orange, who have come here from other countries in Europe, from Ukraine, from around the world, who've made their home here and who are contributing to the development of this island. So that's going to be, you know, a very different country. And I've often said that the arrangement we come to, it will be less like when Germany reunited in 1990, when there was a strong desire, but it was all the German people. I think in the case of Ireland, we're probably going to be looking at something like South Africa, where effectively we are creating a new state. And for me, the key about this, and by the way, it's why I think the Shared Island Unit, which the Taoiseach established, has been very successful. It's about building unity of the peoples. It's about people being able to cooperate. It's about building infrastructure. It's about cooperation between the universities and other places of learning on this island. And I think, you know, I still think, you know, there are a lot of very difficult questions we're going to need before we get to some sort of new constitution arrangement. But I do think what is really important, it's something I've always felt, is the more that you can interact and engage with people, the more that you can seek to understand them, the better. It doesn't mean you always have to agree with them. But, you know, by people continuing to try and live and exist in their silos, you know, that's not going to make sense in terms of trying to build future cooperation.
You have spoken about the importance of long-term planning for a united Ireland. Do you agree with one of your colleagues, Billy Keller, who's come out to say recently that, listen, Fianna Fáil must be willing to take on a leadership role in preparing for unity?
Well, I think so. I mean, you know, I would always make the point that the Good Friday Agreement, you know, Fianna Fáil played a really significant role. Now, the Good Friday Agreement doesn't belong to any political party. It belongs to the people of the island of Ireland. But if you look at the role, and it actually goes right back to Charlie Haughey, then Albert Reynolds, and on to Bertie Ahern, you know, the Fianna Fáil leaders played a major role in the development of the peace process and signing the Good Friday Agreement and putting in place the structures whereby humans could work together, which to me is really important. I think we certainly need to talk more about that. I mean, I made the point, I think we need to have more programs where we have citizens interacting. Like, it's all very well having capital investment like the Narrow Water Bridge, like, you know, investment in university places and joint research programs. But the more you can put people from these islands in the same room talking about issues together, you know, the better that will be. And I don't think we should shy away from talking about that. I think we should be, you know, Fianna Fáil as a party should be very proud of that. I think, you know, we should also be very proud of the fact we're a multilateral party. We have always supported engagement with the European Union, with the United Nations. And I think about Ireland taking our place, you know, among the nations of the world. We shouldn't shy away from talking in a very assertive way about our role in all of that, but also in articulating, you know, the vision that we have for the future, which is not a very narrow nationalist vision that's offered by others, but it's a vision that's inclusive and that will ensure that all of the citizens of this island can prosper.
Going back to your journey, I mean, you've served in both the Dáil and the Seanad, two very different political spaces. What was your experience like in the Seanad, and how do you view its role today? I mean, do you think the institution is living up to its full potential? Is there a case for reform there?
So I think there is a benefit to a second chamber. I'm not always convinced of it, but I certainly found the quality of debate in the Seanad was often a lot better. So people often brought their expertise to particular debates. It was a lot more reflective. Some of what passes for debate in the Dáil is a lot more like theatre. I actually enjoy a lot more the work of the Oireachtas committees. At committee level, you get a lot more work done, and you tend to see less of the, you know, the party bickering that goes on. You know, people develop an interest in a particular area and work collectively and collaboratively. And being blunt, sometimes some of the noisiest voices in the Dáil are among the least impressive performers when it comes to committees. So how do you measure your performance of your your TD or senator, well, I'd look at, you know, what impact do they have in legislation and policy? And you can often do that much more effectively through committee work. That's it. I mean, I certainly enjoyed my time in the Shannons. While I was there, I sat on the Brexit committee. I sat on the committee on arts, culture, communications and sport. During that period in particular, we looked at all of the work that led to the Online Safety and Media Regulation Act and exploring, you know, the whole issues around online safety, but around, you know, how technology is changing society. And I think it has a huge impact. But for me, it was something that was fascinating. And I was able to work with, you know, like-minded individuals from other parties and none to be able to try to achieve the best results.
You mentioned the Oireachtas committees. You are chair of the Oireachtas Committee on AI. And we know how prevalent this issue has been over the past number of years, and it's going to be a major issue going forward, whether people like it or not. And there's a lot of concern about the technology, but there's also a lot of excitement about the potentials of it. You've said Ireland could become, quote, the AI island, but only if we act quickly on key infrastructure. What do you think are some of the most urgent steps Ireland needs to take now to avoid falling behind?
So I think, first of all, you're right. I mean, it is, artificial intelligence is going to be transformative. And sorry, it is already transforming so many sectors, from agriculture to transport, from what's going on in education to particularly in healthcare. And I mean, I'm really fascinated by how AI can be used in healthcare for picking out diseases and tumours, for, you know, helping to identify and protein folding, identifying drugs to be able to combat particular diseases, supporting doctors in that space. So there's some fascinating things that are happening. I think for Ireland, there are a number of things that we are doing and we need to do. So if you look at what the government has done, starting with a couple of years ago, appointing an AI ambassador, then an independent AI advisory council, drawing from people from academia, from the legal side, from business, from startups, to be able to inform the policy. We have a Minister for Artificial Intelligence in Niamh Smith. We have the Oireachtas Committee on AI. The role of our committee is to raise public awareness around this, plus to advise government on policy. We will soon be having a national office on artificial intelligence. There's a plan for an AI observatory so that we're prepared for a lot of the changes that are happening, particularly in the area of employment. There's going to be a lot of displacement. When Ireland holds the EU presidency during the second half of next year, we're going to be having an AI summit. So part of it is around getting the debate out there, you know, that we are seen as at the fore of trying to understand this, because with artificial intelligence, we're all learning. You know, if somebody can predict exactly what's going to happen with AI, I'll be amazed right now. But we do know it's happening. It's happening really quickly. I think we're in a good place. I think obviously people will know a lot of the tech companies are based here. We've good regulatory experience, not perfect. There are a lot of challenges that we need to address. But I do think for you know, this phenomenal technology and tied in with others, including quantum computing and so on, we need to look at how it can best improve citizens' lives. So as a state, what can the state do in terms of using AI with all the safety measures and guardrails in place to be able to more effectively and efficiently deliver public services? You know, with the resources that we have, how can we target them in a way that will lead to the most effective and efficient results? How can we improve citizens' healthcare? You know, we've got to start to digitalize health records, but by using all the health data we have, can we then employ that in a way that will combat disease, that will ensure healthier lifestyles for all of our citizens? So I'm really excited about what we can do. You know, there's some incredible people in Ireland operating in this space. But I also think, you know, Irish people, once informed about the potential of something like this, will embrace it. Yes, we have to have the safety measures. And, you know, there are problems if we don't. And, you know, the argument that is always made is that we have to ensure that we have safe AI, because it's going to be impossible to make AI safe. So at the product manufacturer stage, you know, we set out the rules. I think the European Union, in terms of what has, you know, been done with the AI Act, it's not perfect, but it's a very good start to try and regulate in that space. And particularly when, you know, it is a global race at the moment. I certainly wouldn't be happy as going down the route of the US, which is very much, you know, a lot of the tech bros see regulation as an enemy of innovation. Regulation and innovation are not mutually exclusive. Or in the case of a country like China or Iran, where the state is effectively using AI to monitor its own citizens, which is a direction we definitely need to steer clear of. So I think for the democratic world, it is important that we infuse the utilization of artificial intelligence with those principles of democracy, human rights and the rule of law.
I want to ask you about being under the Fianna Fáil banner. You recently wrote this op-ed in the Irish Times titled, quote, "The Fianna Fáil I joined was the party that got things done. What happened to us?" In the piece, you reflect on the party's history, a lot of which you believe the party should be proud of, but you express concerns that the party today has lost some of that passion, some of that drive. What motivated you to write that article?
Well, I don't think that the party has. I mean, I think if you look, and certainly within individuals in Fianna Fáil, there are a lot of individuals there who are very innovative. I have to say, I mean, I'm really enjoying our parliamentary party meetings, which, you know, people who are outside, you think it's all about rows. It's actually not. They're often, you know, very in-depth policy discussions around how to address big picture issues like housing and infrastructure and disability and childcare. I think part of the problem has been that in many ways as politicians, we have ceded power to civil servants and state agencies and non-elected advisors. And, you know, I'm reflecting the views of not just constituents, but people I know. Why does it take so bloody long to get certain things done? And I often compare, you know, this year is actually the centenary of Ard na Cruithe, which Ireland was, I mean, the poverty in Ireland in the 1920s, we did not have money. And yet a decision was taken then by the fledgling Cumann na Gael government, and the state rode in behind it to, you know, design, plan and build Ard na Cruithe. And within 6 years, it was providing over 80% of the power to the state. You know, that was, you know, revolutionary for its time. And we kind of need to look at, you know, our Ard na Cruithe moments now, because Ard na Cruithe would never get built today. And that's not to say, you know, you have to have obviously environmental standards and labour standards and so on. But there are just so many barriers and so many blockages. We've got to get back to looking at the common good. What is it that our citizens need? And it's not just a very strong economy, which we have. It's not just a very good education system, which we have. But we need to make sure that we have a society and communities where the services that we need are delivered quickly. Housing is obviously the biggest issue, but there's a frustration with state agencies, Ishgairn being one in particular, about how slow they are in terms of delivery. And, you know, if it was money, if we were not a wealthy country, you could kind of say, oh, well, look, maybe it's money. But it's not. You know, we have the brain power that's there. I think we've got to challenge those who don't believe in the common good. And we've got to challenge those who are not sufficiently ambitious. Because if you're in charge of a relevant state agency and all you're doing is putting roadblocks in the way, then you're part of the problem. So for me, it's about politicians going right to the top from the Taoiseach saying, we're in charge. This is what our people want. This is why we are an elected government with the mandate that we have. And in the same way as, for instance, during COVID, we took very difficult but correct decisions to safeguard public health. We need the same approach now on housing and infrastructure and on other issues.
And it's just to stick on housing, I mean, your colleagues and fellow Wexford man, James Brown, has he believes he can end this housing crisis in his term of office, despite that Department of Finance report saying that the housing crisis will persist until 2040. Your reaction when you saw that report from the Department of Finance, and are you optimistic about this new housing plan that we've seen?
Well, I should say that the Future 40 plan from the Department of Finance, I welcome, because what it actually is, it's about long-term thinking, because, you know, too often in Ireland, we're obsessed by five-year plans. I mean, we had more five-year plans than the Soviet Union ever had around a whole range of issues. We've got to look at, you know, what are the, you know, the big picture national and global issues that are impacting. So we've already talked about AI and technology. We know, for instance, the climate and biodiversity crises are having an impact. We look at, for instance, all the storms we're having and so on. There's also geopolitical events, you know, between what's happening between Russia's invasion of Ukraine, what's been happening in the Middle East, what's been going on in parts of Africa in terms of Sudan. When we look at, you know, the United States and the very clear shift in policy under President Trump, when we look at growing authoritarianism in places like China, Iran, and even dangerously in countries in Europe like Hungary. So you've those big, bigger picture issues, as well as, by the way, the demographic challenge that was outlined in Future 40. So you've all of that global, which is impacting on a small open society like Ireland. We are lucky as a country that we are continuing to grow as a population. That means, one, we need to have a state that can respond to that. And it means we have to be ambitious. And I think, you know, for James Rowan as Minister for Housing, I'm glad he's saying, I have the ambition to be able to address this housing crisis. But I want to see that ambition right across the public sector. Every relevant Secretary General of a government department and every chief executive of a state agency should be waking up every morning saying, what am I doing to deliver more homes for people in Ireland? And, you know, if there are blockages, what am I doing to get them out of the way? And we're not getting that right across the state at the moment. And I think that's where my frustration, and I would say that of a lot of, you know, my Fianna Fáil TD and senator colleagues, a lot of our councillors and a lot of our members around the country as well.
Is that something you think the Taoiseach takes on board, those thoughts?
I think so. I mean, you know, Micheál Martin is a very experienced politician, probably the most experienced in Leinster House. He's a safe pair of hands. I mean, I would often make the point about, if you think about the meeting that Micheál Martin had with Donald Trump around St. Patrick's Day, and it was a week after that horrific meeting that Donald Trump and J.D. Vance had with President Zelensky of Ukraine. And I think everyone was kind of watching, wondering what's going to happen here. But, you know, who would you rather have in that room, you know, as a safe pair of hands to represent Ireland, who understands the geopolitical situation? And he handled it really, really well. So I think he certainly gets a lot of that. I just want him to see, which I know, you know, he's been able to do during COVID and famously with the smoking ban, where he says, we're going to do this. You have to help us deliver. And if you're not supportive of our agenda, we get you out of the way. And I think we need to see that right across government. I think part of the problem has been, and the frustration I'm expressing is, you know, we are not seeing the necessary level of urgency to address some of those, you know, big picture challenges that we're facing. I mean, our Ardna Crusha moments today should be around renewable energy. I mean, we really need, not just for climate reasons, but also for energy security reasons and to deal with the cost of living crisis. You know, this is a country that is ripe for the development of renewable energy. And if we look at how painfully slow it is to get, you know, offshore wind, for instance, up and moving. 20 years ago, Ireland was a leader in offshore wind, right? When the construction of the Arkla Wind Bank, which is in the waters of my constituency, was built. Right? We haven't built an, you know, offshore wind turbine since then. So we fell behind. Yes, we've moved very quickly in terms of an onshore, but the potential of offshore is huge. And I'm only hoping we are going to miss our 2030 targets. I'm optimistic we'd probably make them now by 2031 or 2032. But we then have further 2040 targets. And we really just need to ramp that up and just stay focused on the prize.
I do want to give you an opportunity to respond to this, because you know there's going to be people watching this thinking to themselves, well, listen, you understand what you're saying, but Fianna Fáil has have had more than enough time to solve the housing crisis. You probably have heard that point many times before. Mm. How would you respond to that?
So, well, what I would say is, like, you know, it's not as if there hasn't been some progress. And I would say particularly, for instance, in areas like social housing, there has been significant progress. On affordable housing in particular, I'm not happy with the pace of progress. And I can understand exactly why people will say that. Part of the reason we have these challenges is obviously we are growing as a society and as an economy. And, you know, trying to manage that growth is a challenge. So look, their point of view is very fair. I'm not, by the way, I mean, a lot of the opposition are very critical on a lot of this, but are not coming up with, as I would see it, you know, very realistic alternatives. And I spend a lot of my time, you know, talking to to builders, to electricians, to, you know, the people who are on the ground, who are telling me what the issues are. And we're now trying to address them and resolve them. And I certainly hope, and I mean, this is where I'm saying, you know, why I'm talking about the urgency, we've got to get it done. You know, I make the point about the presidential election. The presidential election will be forgotten about in a matter of weeks. But issues that really impact on people's lives, housing, infrastructure, childcare, disability services, that's stuff that makes a real difference. And the reason why it's important to me is, you know, these aren't just statistics. You know, these are people I know. It's family, it's friends, it's people in the community that I know and that I love and that I care about. And these are people who, you know, if you like, do all the right things, who are involved in their community. And as the state, we should be seen as responding to their needs.
You have a lot to focus on during your time in the Dáil for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, but I'm really conscious. Like, it is a great honour to be elected to represent people. We live in a, you know, a stable democracy, one of the oldest stable democracies in the world, even though we, you know, think of ourselves as a young country. And it's something that, you know, I hugely value, because we're seeing around the world, as I said, a loss of a lot of the emphasis on democracy and human rights and the rule of law. I think Ireland is in a strong place, as we've shown, that we can stand up and we can talk about those values, but we shouldn't take them for granted. And I mean, I'm always conscious of the great honour it is to be an elected member of a democratic national parliament.
A couple of final questions. On a lighter note, I hear you're an avid runner. Is it true you've completed over 30 marathons?
So I did the Dublin Marathon recently, and that was my 39th. So I'm a bit older and slower now. My big love, and I was involved in setting up Gorey Park Run, and so I'm a member of Copen Athletic Club at home. But I'd say to anyone, you know, running is, it's one of the cheapest sports that there is. All you need is a decent pair of runners. You can get out, you can either run on your own, you can run in groups. I find the parkrun community is great, because people can run, walk, all ages and abilities. But to be able to get out there, you know, in the fresh air and do something, I just think it's great, not just for your physical health, but for your mental health as well.
We look at your life right now. What are three things you think that really ground you in gratitude?
So I'm always grateful to my parents, and particularly to the value that they put in education, and the sacrifices they made in order to get myself, my brother, and my three sisters, you know, to give those opportunities. And I certainly know I was very lucky. The schools I was in Gorey, I then went on to UCD. You know, they were great experiences. And, you know, the opportunity in that, for that, I'm always very, very grateful. And you're always grateful then for family and friends, because there'll be plenty of good days, but when you have the bad days, they're always going to be the ones who are going to be there, that, you know, you can trust them, you can cry on their shoulder, you know, they'll hear you give out about something. And so having that network, I've always found really good. And I think, you know, more generally, and I make that point about Ireland, this is not a perfect country. I totally get that. And we have a lot of problems. But it's also an amazing place. Like, it's a beautiful place, but incredible people. And as I said, you know, that having those opportunities around democracy and, you know, every day I go into Leinster House, there's nearly always a peaceful protest outside the front of Leinster House. You know, that is such a wonderful and important part of our democracy. And the fact that, you know, we have a free press, that people are able to debate and express their points of view, I think we should always appreciate that.
Deputy Byrne, thank you for joining me.
Great. No, thank you very much.
Thanks for watching this episode with Deputy Malcolm Byrne. If you enjoyed it, give us a like and subscribe on YouTube. You can also follow us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. You can also follow us on all social media platforms. Until next time, thanks for being part of the conversation.